So a city can shape the emotional life of the people who live there. But can one city change the whole world? Historian Russell Shorto thinks so. In his books about New York and Amsterdam, he makes the case that the new liberal ideas springing up in the Netherlands in the 1600s shaped the new world. When I was in Amsterdam earlier this year, I called him up for a tour. So here I am at Amsterdam Central Station, and there are trams going by. It's a beautiful sunny day. What would I have seen 300, 400 years ago?
Okay, so now, you know, looking in front of you, you see, you know, buses and trams.
Tourists.
And it's probably, you know, the least historically seeming cityscape you could imagine. But if you walk, you know, 100 yards or so ahead, you will come right to the first of the canals, which points its way into the city center. That's the Damrak. And if you can stand there, you wouldn't even necessarily be aware of it, but you're actually on a bridge, which is called the New Bridge. On your left is a row of 17th century townhouses.
Yeah.
So in the Middle Ages, in Europe, the economic system, the social structure, was what's called the manorial system. You had a nobleman who lived in a castle, and he had land, and there were serfs or peasants who worked on that land, and they paid crops or rent to him, and he provided protection. That was the structure of society.
And the land was not yours.
Here, they started to remake the land. Where you're standing now is actually just about on top of a dike ring that was built in the Middle Ages. And that was built to protect Amsterdam.
Built to protect it from the sea as opposed to from invaders?
Yeah, exactly, from the water. And then they have this new land, and it's not owned by the king, it's not owned by the church or a nobleman, it's owned by the people who did this work to reclaim it. So they then divide it up into parcels and build their houses on it and begin buying and selling it.
So is this the first real instance of private land ownership in this part of the world?
On a scale that was so large that it was the norm, yeah. And by, you know, relatively ordinary people. So they became the owners, and they began buying and selling, and that then set off this kind of spirit of innovation. You know, they were already a shipping country, and so they developed the shipping empire. So the next innovation in all of this, 1602, a new kind of company came into being. Before that time, a bunch of people got together, the ships went out, the ships came back, the venture dissolved. They divided up whatever profit there was, and it was done.
So it's like a short-term investment, almost.
It always was that kind of thing. In 1602, they founded the Dutch East India Company. And the big innovation was this would be a permanent company. If you buy a piece of this company, it's going to stay around, and therefore you have the right to sell your share later. So this then creates the concept of shares of stock. And so where you're standing then, that's where everybody, when they were coming from the ships, this spot, the New Bridge, became the world's first true stock market, where people would buy and trade these pieces of paper that represented pieces of the Dutch East India Company.
This emergent way of doing business and of building land and of owning private land, what kind of impact do you think that had in terms of the political philosophy that grew out from the Netherlands?
Yeah, I think all the things basically that you associate with Amsterdam in the Golden Age are related to this. Art turned to the secular. You know, art by and large up to that point was religious themed. Suddenly, the art of Rembrandt and Vermeer were suddenly painting individuals in ordinary settings, you know, a woman pouring milk into a bowl or something. I mean, it was expressed maybe most cogently in the philosophy of Spinoza, who was an Amsterdam merchant. He soaked all of this in, and it all became part of his philosophy, which argued essentially that if the individual is so important, then it follows that the only political philosophy that really has validity is one in which every individual has an equal say in the government. So this notion then very quickly extends in all directions.
You and I are going to pick up this conversation in New York, and presumably the ships sailed out of here, out of this port, to go to the New World.
Yeah, oh, exactly. It would have these stupendous world historic consequences, one of which was the founding of New York City.
Well, I guess I'll talk to you on the other side of the Atlantic then.
Okay, Sarah, have a good trip.
It's beautiful out here. The flags are flapping in the wind, but the lady looks beautiful, and we've made it to the other side of the Atlantic.
Okay, so you're looking out over the Inner Harbor.
Yep.
Nice.
Tell me how the history of this place begins as it applies to European culture.
Okay, so on the other side of the Atlantic, the city of Amsterdam rose largely on the Dutch East India Company. They wanted to find a shortcut to Asia, and they hired the Englishman Henry Hudson. So he sailed to America, sailed up the coast. The Dutch laid claim to this whole territory. So eventually they learned that you follow the Hudson River up to the Mohawk, and then the Mohawk goes west, and that goes all the way to the Great Lakes. So they knew that that was the way to get at North America. So on the strength of that, they found this colony called New Netherland.
So talk a little bit about some of the principles that the Dutch carried with them.
Well, I think there's two things that they brought that was really different from what the English brought to their colonies. Their approach to free trade, to capitalism, which they were perfecting in Amsterdam with the first stock market and so on. And they brought this notion of tolerance. I mean, the Dutch Republic was kind of the melting pot of Europe, and they were relatively tolerant of other religions. And so those two things together, tolerance and free trade, are kind of a recipe for New York City. I mean, if you just kind of add water and add time, I mean, then the skyscrapers start to grow. That's kind of what set New York apart from Boston and anywhere in English North America.
And what are some of the philosophical underpinnings that the Dutch carried with them in terms of land politics in the very early days? You said that the entire territory was claimed, I'm assuming, for the Dutch crown. Is that right?
No, there wasn't a crown. I mean, there were individual landowners. I mean, if you look at a map of Manhattan Island in the Dutch period, it looks completely settled because it was divided up and you'd saw somebody's name on each plot. This colony was developing at a really interesting time in the 17th century when there were these beginnings of ideas about individual liberty and freedom of religion, and you know, it would be 100 years before they really took off. Who knows what it would have been had it stayed Dutch.
So how much would you say that the ethos of Manhattan and perhaps the Northeast, if not the entire country, owes to those early kind of philosophical changes that were happening thanks to the development of the Netherlands and of Amsterdam the original?
Yeah, how much is a scary thing to say, but it's certainly a part of things. I mean, it was founded by the Dutch, and it became very quickly this multi-ethnic free trading port. Then if you jump into the 19th century, then you have the great waves of immigrants coming from Europe, making footfall on Manhattan Island, and seeing what was by then this teeming mix of different kinds of ethnicities, worshiping different faiths and speaking different languages and all. And they took this all in and said, oh, well, this is America. But, you know, it wasn't really America yet. It was New York. And it was New York because it had been New Amsterdam. Many of them eventually then moved westward. They went to Ohio. They went all the way to California. And they brought that with them. So they made it America. So, you know, in that kind of subterranean way, you know, what this small group of people in the 17th century were doing came to be part of the American DNA, you might say.
That's Russell Shorto. His book about New York is called The Island at the Center of the World. His book on Amsterdam, which he calls a prequel to the New York book, is Amsterdam, A History of the World's Most Liberal City.